How's it going, everybody? Bernd Alvers and Dave Meltzer here, Wrestling Observer Radio, November 7, 2024, figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We got a lot of news to get into here today, including AEW and NXT head-to-head, and Dave, you're going to be reviewing NXT today.
That's fine.
Didn't record. It's the first time it's ever happened. Just, it's nothing. So, luckily, I think they go up on the CW app, like, early the next day. So I'm going to try and watch it this morning, but I have not seen it yet. But we'll talk about that and Dynamite later on.
Yeah, I've noticed, I had checked thing because of the change of day, it might not record, but it did record. It was going to record for me, but I think I had to redo Collision. For whatever reason, Collision's been like every other week not recording for me. And it wasn't going to record this week, but I plugged it into record again. So I don't know why that is, but... You know, some DirecTV glitch, I'm thinking.
All right, let's get into the news here. Bruce Pritchard and Michael Hayes both on leaves of absence from WWE for different unrelated reasons, but expected to be back. Do you expect them to be back?
Do I expect them to be back? Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
I don't have any inside information, but sometimes I hear that extended leave of absence with no return date. But don't worry about it. They'll be back. Then they don't come back.
Yeah, that does sometimes happen. I don't think it's going to happen here. But, you're right, though. You know, I mean, there's people who are skeptical of that, for sure. I mean, Bruce's thing was a family emergency. And, Hayes has actually been gone for a couple weeks, and for whatever reason, it didn't get out. He's just been gone, and he's not going to be back anytime soon. And there's no return date for either of them. There's nothing. That's basically what it is. So, that's
very high up, both of them.
Well, Pritchard's real high up. I mean, and you know, Hayes is the producer for all the Bloodline segments, so. So he's pretty important. I mean, I guess he would be the most important producer if he's the producer of the most important program that the company has. So yeah, they're key guys. They've been around for a long, long time. Pritchard dates back to 87. Not consecutively. He's been in and out many times. Hayes has been around for the most part since like 95-ish. And he's had his troubles and everything, over the years. But I mean, maintaining employment in that type of position in a Vince McMahon world for that long takes a lot of takes a lot of political savvy. I'll say that, because most people, they, you know, working for Vince, run afoul of Vince, like Bruce, you know, multiple times. So, Hayes is very respected as a wrestling mind, which has allowed him to stay in situations where many others would probably have not been able to stay. I mean, there's countless incidents, Hayes is a 1980s pro wrestler, and he still is a 1980s pro wrestler. And that's a completely different world from now. And, completely different environment. And I could see a lot of people going like, well, under Vince understands 1980s pro wrestlers, and, you know, this TKO management, they may not have a fond spot for these old wrestlers. So we'll see.
All right. We had the TKO earnings call yesterday, and well, they made a lot of money. I think it's the easiest way to.
They grossed a lot of money. They grossed a lot of money.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. They grossed,
$681.2 million in revenues, net income, $57.7 million.
Profit was only $23.1 million.
Yes.
So the profit was not that high for a number of reasons. $40 million of that was money allocated for the Kung Lee settlement, and that's probably like the big one. Their profit margins are incredibly high. The WWE profit margin is so much higher than it's ever been. A key part of that is the synergy between the UFC and WWE jobs. They have managed to cut more than $100 million in expenses, with that merger of the two brands and being able to let go people, on one side or the other, mostly on the WWE side, because there were already people who were doing that position. And, you know, a lot, you know, basically people are doing both, you know, but like the you know, marketing people are doing both, and sponsorship people are doing both and things like that. So, and also, you know, WWE's been setting record gates. UFC's been setting record gates. UFC set the all-time record gate at the Sphere. They set the all-time record gate for Accor Arena in Paris, France. They set the all-time record gate for a couple of other arenas as well, that they ran for pay-per-view shows. One of the things that they talked about was the UFC rights negotiations will be due in 2026. So next year will be the year, early 2026. And the other big thing that'll be up in early 2026 is the WWE deal with Peacock. So those are the next big things that they're negotiating. And they pretty much categorized the UFC negotiations as the, you know, virtually all the sports, the major sports right now have long-term deals, you know, NBA, NFL, it's long, long, long-term. NHL's fairly long-term. So UFC is the next big one to come due. So they're expecting a lot. Now, they said that they will not put Fight Pass, you know, up like the WWE Network was, where they basically sold it out to, you know, the to Netflix, essentially, although in the United States it's to Peacock, but next Netflix for the rest of the world. They said they want to keep it separate. They see it as a good growth place. They'll probably do some Fight Pass exclusive UFC shows, but they're going to do more and more live events, whether it's submission grappling or kickboxing, maybe some boxing, college wrestling, things like that. But they want to do more live events there, and less taped events was one of the things that they said. The UFC had well, one of the things next quarter that's going to hurt the earnings, which they already said, although, you know, they're still going to have great earnings. And it's and you know what? I mean, like, the fact that the Raw, you know, Raw was getting about $75 million a quarter on their USA deal. And the next quarter will be, because of they had no leverage and everything, after this deal was up, they only were only getting $25 million for this quarter, October, November, December. But the fact is, because of the November Saudi show, that's $50 million. So that pretty much makes up for it right there. So it makes up for that loss pretty much completely. There was some talk about boxing. They said that they will get into the boxing business if somebody else puts up the money. So they will help promote and market to take a cut. And they pushed the idea that with Dana and Nick Khan, they have two complete boxing experts that they can use to promote these events. But they're not going to put up money to buy these fights. You know, if somebody else wants to buy the fights, they will work with them. So that's their thing on boxing. They're, you know, they have just moved, you know, in a purchase. They purchased the PBR tour and a couple other things as well. But what they're looking at now doing is trying to sell to cities the idea of a UFC show, a WWE show, and a PBR event all on the same weekend or same week, with the idea, you know, that they'll all draw different fans and it'll be a big tourist week and things like that. So that's one of the strategies that they've got going. It's interesting because, you know, it's so different from years ago when WWE would try to keep UFC out of the cities that they go to, because when the UFC would run before a WWE show, the WWE show attendance would drop considerably. So, which does not happen anymore, but, they're trying to do that. As far as they were asked about converting UFC to the WWE pay-per-view model, and they certainly did not give the impression that they want to do that. And, with the ESPN, they said that they're, you know, happy with ESPN and things like that, but they talked about other suitors are going to be out there. They talked about the idea of perhaps going back to, you know, the situation where they would put the pay-per-views back on, you know, regular television, which they took it off. Now that you know, the deal basically was that that originally got to this ESPN deal was that Dana was haggling with you know, DirecTV and In Demand, which doesn't even exist anymore, trying to get the percentage, you know, from the 50-50 to a stronger percentage for them, like say 65-35, and they weren't willing to budge, figuring that, you know, you got no alternative. And they found out that they did have an alternative because ESPN bought the whole thing and gave, you know, essentially gave them, guaranteed them the money that they were making in the McGregor-Rousey years on pay-per-view every single year. And the way it makes sense is that ESPN's keeping 100% of the revenue and they're paying UFC, you know, with certainly more than 50% of it, but, they're still making a profit on that deal. So, but they talked about, you know, like that's also a possibility. There were a lot of other things talked about. WWE, I think, had 41 record gates in the quarter as far as records, professional wrestling records for arena, for the specific arenas, not like UFC, which actually set all-time gate records for any events, concerts, anything at several of the arenas that they went to. There will be, the next quarter they're going to be, paying more in that Kung Lee lawsuit. They're going to spend, I think that they wrote a check for $125 million in October. There's going to be another $125 million check written first quarter of 2025, and then another $125 million second quarter of 2025. So the UFC fighters will probably be getting money next summer. They refinanced debt. Total debt is $2,738,000. They're just the interest alone on the debt is like $60 million a quarter. What else? They were no more events at the Sphere, at least for now. They said that it was one and done. It's the only event that they're ever going to do there. And then they said, well, you know how these rock bands will go on a farewell tour and 20 years later, they're still touring. So you never say never. But there's no plans to go back. They did, even though they set a record gate, the profit margin on that Sphere show was lower than a normal pay-per-view. So from that perspective, while they did not lose money on the show at all, it did not make as much as a normal pay-per-view would do, even with the $21-plus million gate that they drew. And, yeah, it was 42 records set at WWE live events for gate during the quarter. So, you know, that's obviously due to the new ticket pricing structure that they do, where it's tickets are much higher than they've ever been before. And at least when it comes to, well, I mean, pretty much almost all the events, people are paying them. Obviously a lot fewer house shows. There's, you know, WWE's going to run the house shows. They ran the European tour this week, up through Wednesday. So the final show was, today in Sheffield. Now they're coming home. They are going to be doing the Christmas week house show tour. But aside from that, the Christmas week, there are no domestic house shows that I've seen on the schedule at all. So they're pretty much getting out of that business as far as the house shows. You know, obviously they'll be doing TVs and everything like that. So schedule-wise for the talent, it's not appreciably different. AEW talent still will probably have more days off, but it's not appreciably different from, you know, what it, between the two companies. Whereas for years, obviously the AEW talent had an easier schedule, not as far as work because they were working harder in the matches, but as far as dates on the road. So, you know, some people, if they wanted to, you know, an advantage AEW had is if you wanted to be home with your kids more, AEW is a better place for you if the money's close. Now that advantage is really not there because most people are going to be working one show a week, two shows maybe on a pay-per-view week. And even the pay-per-views, it's not like everyone works the pay-per-views. It's only a small percentage of the crew is working the pay-per-views now. You know, obviously some people are going to work two shows a week, but they're going to be the exceptions, not the rule. So, you know, that's, I'm trying to think what other stuff that they had that they got into. You know, just a lot of, there will be more cost savings. They are not done with implementing cost saving strategies when it comes to the front office and duplication of jobs. That is largely the highlight of everything. They didn't really specifically talk about anything such as, WrestleMania advance. I thought they might talk about it. They did not talk about that at all. Did talk about, really ramping up the sponsorship. When it comes to UFC and WWE, UFC actually generated slightly more revenue. Live tickets, UFC runs a lot fewer events, but both groups did about $51 million in live tickets because UFC does a lot more money per event. Television rights are pretty similar. UFC is way ahead in sponsorships, but WWE is ahead in licensing. So they're going to try, obviously, to boost. They think that there's a lot of growth in sponsorships in WWE. You'll see more sponsors in the ring, as you started to see, and things like that.
Well, I guess that means that we've got to talk about Conor.
Yeah, well, Conor McGregor is currently in a civil case on a rape charge from December 2018. The trial's gone on for 2 days now, and the woman in question, it's in Dublin. You know, essentially, this was the case that, if you remember, years ago when the New York Times had the big story.
It's like 2018.
The incident is from December 7th, 2018. The story broke in like 2020 or 2021. I remember what happened was she went and pressed charges. I believe it was later. So maybe in 2019 she pressed charges. And so I remember all the rumors going around that there's charges going to be against Conor McGregor for rape. And it was one of those things where eventually there was an article in one of the Dublin papers, and it didn't say Conor McGregor, but it said famous sports star is being accused, internationally famous sports star. And people knew it was Conor McGregor. One of the things, and it's probably a good thing, is that in Irish law, if you were accused of a sexual crime, not only do they withhold the name of the victim, but they withhold the name of the person because of the idea that if you are not convicted, you're innocent, but your reputation is destroyed if your name gets out. So that is a law there. That is not a law in the United States. And eventually the New York Times actually did write a story and did print his name. So this is that case coming up. What happened in that case, as far as the legal case, the prosecutors felt that there was not enough evidence for a conviction. The woman involved was brokenhearted and eventually filed suit. And the suit was not settled out of court. It is going to trial. And she testified today. She gave the details of what happened. It's going to be tough because McGregor's lawyers already caught her. Not caught her. They showed footage, which she said she had no memory of things that had happened on that day from surveillance camera footage showing her going places with them, with Conor and one of Conor's friends, a guy named James Lawrence, who was Conor's sidekick. You basically have to prove she was bruised up, apparently, or she claims she was. She claimed that there were photos shot of her all bruised up, but her friend who shot them, she asked her friend to delete them because at first she didn't want to press charges. She just wanted to be left alone. And then as time went on, she was encouraged to press charges. And again, they felt they couldn't get a conviction and everything like that. So the legal case was dropped. So He has not testified yet. She is in the middle of testifying. She broke down several times during the testimony, going through the details of what happened. Essentially, you know, they're basically saying that she was pinned down and he choked her and things like that. It was a pretty harrowing situation. She thought she was going to die. And she bit him to get him off her. That was her claims. But he will probably be testifying soon, I would presume.
All right, we've got matches coming up for the Tokyo Dome, and we actually also have a match for the Wrestle Dream show, or I guess it's Wrestle Dynasty, which is the January 5th show with AEW. So this is the lineup for the Dome thus far. January 4th, Zack Sabre Jr. defending the IWGP World Heavyweight title against Shota Umino.
Yeah, so that match is now. I mean, it certainly looked, at the Power Struggle show on Monday, it was Monday. I just watched it Sunday night. That's why I got all confused. But that was the impression I got watching the show. But everybody was so hoping that somehow, you know, there'd be some Hail Mary and, like, Okada or Takeshita or somebody like that was going to face Zach at the Tokyo Dome, and they weren't going to go with Umino. That Umino would maybe wrestle him in maybe like San Jose or maybe in, what's the other show? The Long Beach. But that is not the case. It is going to be Umino at the Tokyo Dome, and it is really interesting. It's going to be an experiment. I mean, this is a card that is a fine card. Most of the matches will be very good. There will likely be some great matches on this show. But it is not a marquee show. And New Japan is not on fire by any means. And to draw big, like the last two Tokyo Domes have been a pretty good success. You know, one did 26,000, which was the one with Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay as the first meeting between the two. I think they may have had one meeting prior at a PWG show, I think it was. Maybe I'm wrong. But it was the first one since Will Ospreay became like this big superstar. So that was real big with the out of Japan audience. So they did very, very well. And then last year they did even better, with Naito challenging for the title against Sonata, you know, longtime tag team partners, and Bryan Danielson against Okada. And it was Moxley and Will Ospreay and David Finlay in a three-way. So that was a lot bigger marquee stuff. So, Zach and Umino. Zach, you know, is a fantastic, fantastic wrestler, one of the best in the world. Right up with anyone. But not a history of being a giant draw. And this is his first time on top at the Tokyo Dome. And Umino, also first main event at the Tokyo Dome. And, you know, Umino's in a tough position. When he came out, the people booed him. He's kind of become an uncool character. And when you're a babyface and you're uncool, that is a very, very tough position to be in. So, if they do 25,000 people or even close to that, I would call this a big success, and it will show that people will buy January 4th Tokyo Dome because it's January 4th Tokyo Dome, no matter what the card is. Or if they are down, it will tell, you know, that they won't do that. So this is an interesting test of the value of January 4th at the Tokyo Dome.
Well, the rest of the show so far has Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Evil, which was announced quite a while ago, actually. That was the first match announced for the show. We got David Finlay versus Yota Tsuji for the IWGP Global title. Probably, I would expect a title change there. We have Doki versus El Desperado for the junior title.
That match is going to be tremendous. Doki is great. And they're both great, but that's going to be... That'll be a tremendous match. Zach and Umino really should be a tremendous match. The two times that Umino has really been put in a position, you know, going, I think going for the championship, you know, with the one with Will Ospreay, was a phenomenal match. The one with John Moxley was a phenomenal match as well. So he's 2 for 2 in challenging. And you know, so as far as the match itself, it should be a Tokyo Dome level match, but there's just that stigma of Umino as being kind of like not a big success as much as they've been trying to push him.
Now we've got the Ren Narita versus Jeff Cobb and Ryohei Oiwa three-way for the New Japan World TV title. Mm. Kushida and Kevin Knight versus Robbie Eagles and Kosei Fujita and TJP and Francisco Akira and Clark Connors and Drilla Maloney four-way for the junior tag team titles. And that's the lineup thus far. And then for Dynasty...
There's also going to be the tag team titles against the winners of the tournament that's coming up. And most likely Sonata and Taichi. And more to be announced, I'm sure.
Yes. And Wrestle Dynasty the next day, AEW New Japan, Zack Sabre Jr. Ricochet has been announced.
Yeah, and probably Kenny Omega and Gabe Kidd. Or Kenny Omega and Tanahashi against the Young Bucks. I'm not sure which one. But, I mean, they shot the angle with Gabe Kidd, so I think that's the one that they're doing. And it was pushed pretty hard. So, yeah, that's... And if Omega is cleared by that day, which he is certainly gunning for that day. Yeah.
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he does that match on the January 4th show and the tag match with the Bucks on the January 5th show.
It's a possibility too. Yeah.
All right. We've got Davey Boy Smith Jr., new Triple Crown champion. We talked about him fighting for the belt a couple of days ago. He won the title.
He won the title, yeah. Saw the match. Good match. It was different, to say the least. I mean, the thing about this is, you know, when he was a kid, you know, he's a big tape trader and everything. And plus, you know, in that family, you know what I mean? It's like you live in that family, you're watching a lot of wrestling tapes because everyone in that family was between, you know, TJ and Natty and you know, everyone was, you know, they grew up around wrestling and not just their local wrestling. I mean, they grow up, you know, the one thing with Calgary is that it had that big connection with Japan. So they all watched a lot of Japanese stuff. So Harry, you know, growing up, I mean, his big thing, he loved all Japan pro wrestling. Triple Crown, Budokan, you know, that glory days, Misawa Kobashi, you know, Akira Taue, Steve Dr. Death Williams, Jumbo Tsuruta. These were like his heroes and who he wanted to be like. And so, I mean, when he came out, I mean, like he was not in tears, but he got very emotional with the idea of winning the Triple Crown. And it was like, this was like his, you know, when he was like a kid, this was like his goal. His goal wasn't the WWE title. His goal was the Triple Crown, and he got to achieve it. And it was interesting because the match was, I would say the first two-thirds of the match, to me, felt like a very physical 1970s technical wrestling match, you know, but harder hitting, you know, than you would get in a 70s match. But that same kind of style, you know, like a lot of, just a lot of wrestling, solid looking wrestling, not a lot of high spots or things like that. And then the end, you know, was more of a modern finish of a world championship match with, you know, near fall. And, he finally won. And, like one of our readers was there at the show and said that, nobody in the building thought he was going to win that match. You know, it was a real shock. And, you know, he talked about afterwards, you know, that the Triple Crown was, you know, I mean, he grew up watching it and everything like that. And he thanked, his trainers, Tokyo Joe, Billy Robinson, Josh Barnett, and, Minoru Suzuki. And, also thanked Johnny Ace. Which I don't know, like, I don't know if this is the great week to be thanking Johnny Ace, but he did. And, you know, just when he was in there, you know, Johnny Ace, I think Johnny Ace was one of the people who gave him the advice to go there full time, because the deal with him is he essentially, was was offered a deal to go to All Japan and be the top foreign star and team with Kento Miyahara in main events and things like that. And the deal was, is they wanted him to live there, you know, and be a regular on every tour, which takes, you know, it's one thing to go to Japan for a week or even a month. It's another thing. There are guys who have lived there. Before it was very rare, like, you know, Destroyer was lived there. But in recent years, you know, Juice Robinson lived there for a while with Tony Storm, and Will Ospreay and B. Priestley lived there. Zack Sabre does live there. You know, a lot of the guys at certain points have moved there. Jeff Cobb lives there as well right now. So he's living there as well, at least for the next couple of months. And, he got to achieve his goal, and that was that.
All right, New Japan is running a show on Friday on New Japan World. It'll be streaming at 7 Eastern. It's Fighting Spirit Unleashed. And Gabe Kidd and Kosei Fujita is the main event for the Strong Openweight title. And the rest of the show has Takeshita versus TJP in an AEW International title match. Zack Sabre Jr. and Bad Dude Tito versus Ishii and Shota Umino. Kenta and Ryohei Oiwa. Shingo and Yota Tsuji versus Mike Bennett and Matt Taven. We have a New Japan Strong women's title number one contenders match with Anna Jay, Trish Adora, Hazuki and Koguma four-way. We have got Fred Rosser.
The winner of that match will face Mercedes Moné December 15th for the New Japan Strong title.
We've got Fred Rosser and Filthy Tom against Jarrell Nelson and Royce Isaacs.
That's a 2 out of 3 fall match.
Yes, Mustafa Ali versus Leo Rush. We have got New Japan Strong Openweight Tag Champs Mikey Nichols and Shane Haste against James Drake and Zach Gibson.
Grizzled Young Vets.
Yep, David Finley versus Kevin Knight. And the pre-show is Matt Vandegrift versus Seabass Finn. It's a lineup for the show.
I don't know Seabass Finn, but I mean, this is an interesting show. I mean, it's all cold matches, basically. I mean, nothing, no big angles or anything building any of these things. Or not. I mean, the Lawler match, obviously, those guys have been doing, working angles for over a year. But most of it is just, Matt, you know, like Takeshita and TJP, there's nothing to it other than Takeshita's a great wrestler and TJP's a great wrestler. So maybe they'll have a great wrestling match. And the same with Gabe Kidd and Fujita. I mean, the thing with Fujita is that, you know, I mean, he's just such a great underdog. I think that if this match was in Japan, I would tell you for sure it's going to be an absolutely outstanding match. I think it still will be in the United States. I think the people will still get behind Fujita. She's just that kind of a wrestler. And Gabe Kidd, hard hitter, good heel, great heel, actually. Just like Mustafa Ali and Leo Rush or Finley and Kevin Knight. I mean, it's just a bunch of matches that probably should be quite good. And, even Taven and Bennett against the Grizzled Young Vets. I mean, that should be a good match. I mean, Kenta and Oiwa was an interesting one because, you know, Oiwa should really win that one. I don't know that he will, but he really should win that one. It's his time. And, it's most of the time when they have the U.S. shows like the San Jose show or whatever, Chicago shows, they're pay-per-views on New Japan World. So you got to pay like $20 for them, which that usually they're very well worth it. This one is a free show. So it is a rare U.S. show that is just on the thing live and on tape on Friday night.
All right. Take us through these ratings.
All right, there's not, so for last week, the wrestling shows were 1, 2, and 3 in the entertainment standings. SmackDown was actually first. SmackDown, Raw, and AEW Dynamite all went against World Series games. SmackDown was first, obviously, Raw second, and AEW Dynamite a very distant third, tied with 90 Day Fiancé. So, Raw and SmackDown were behind, you know, in I think one NBA game and, NFL on Monday night, obviously. And I think there was a college football game as well. But that's like the only stuff. Dynamite was behind several college football games, several NBA games, one EPL game, and a lot, like 10 news shows. So, you know, they were, you know, as compared to last year, overall, Raw was higher this year in the placings. You know, Dynamite was, they were 28th last year, 30th this year, but this, you know, if you take out all those news shows, the election shows, they actually would have finished higher this year as well. So even though the numbers might be lower, if you look at it in comparison with the top shows on cable, the wrestling shows are doing better this year than last year, even though if you look at the numbers, you'd go, that's not the case. Raw on Monday, 1,466,000 viewers and an 0.48. Up, you know, no World Series this week, but the Chiefs and Bucks game did 20,632,000 viewers and 5.02. So they had they did not have easy competition, and they still did an 0.48. So good number overall. Very high male skew. The Collision Show, 349,000 viewers and 0.09, which, you know, they're always down on the day of a WWE pay-per-view. So this is about what you would expect. In 18 to 49, they were actually slightly up from last year, which it's very rare when they're actually up. You know, and last year they went on the same day as Crown Jewel. This year they went on the same day as Crown Jewel, not head-to-head, but it just always seems, I mean, it's just one of those things. But if there's a big WWE show, even an NXT show on that same day, even not head to head, the Collision number always gets hurt. And obviously they had all the college football, tons of college football against them on a Saturday night. And that is pretty much the rating stuff. You know, I mean, this week it's the stuff for tonight, the head to head. And it's, you know, it essentially comes down to how much does ECW nostalgia mean? Because that NXT show was 100% ECW nostalgia. And if that means something, then they will win the night. And if it doesn't mean something, they would not win the night because, I mean, they didn't even do better on their own night last week. And when AEW had tougher competition last week, but, it was just a normal show. This was not a normal show in AEW. AEW actually had a hell of a show. I mean, marquee-wise, like, I looked at it and I didn't think that, like, I actually think that the rating might be very tough because, number one, you got NXT going head-to-head. That's going to siphon off some viewers. You know, so that's part of it. And I suspect the news will still be pretty high. Obviously, much better than it could have been. You know, if the race was still going on, the race would have hurt him bad. I don't think it's going to hurt him that bad, but I still think that if AEW gets an 0.19 like they've been getting the last 2 weeks, I would consider that very good, you know, really good. And so we'll see.
All right, we'll start with Dynamite, then you can run down the NXT show. It opened up with Tony Schiavone coming out, calling out the Hurt Syndicate, and they're heels, but man, they were over as baby faces. The people are chanting MVP's name.
Well, he made them chant it, you know.
I mean, no, actually, they were chanting his name, and then he was like, what's my name? And they all chanted again. They were chanting his name from the moment he came out. And then they're going nuts for Shelton. They're going nuts for Bobby Lashley, who they called the Almighty. So yeah. Apparently that's not trademarked.
Well, Bobby Lashley, numbers-wise, you know, I mean, that segment last week did real big. I mean, last week the overrun was, I believe it was the highest rated segment of the entire show, and it did over 1 million YouTube views, which that's a great number even for WWE. So for AEW, it's a beyond great number. So will this have a lasting effect? Probably not, but like Bobby Lashley, yeah, he just got there. Of course he's going to be over. It's always someone from WWE comes over first night in. But he did feel, and I tell you, like, I felt watching them, they did come off like they were pretty big stars, you know, compared to most of the AEW guys. They, you know, MVP knows how to talk. They dress like stars. It's a big deal to do that. A lot of people don't get that aspect of the game. They look like stars out there. And carried themselves like stars. Bobby Lashley really carries himself like a star. MVP's a great talker. Just, man, you know, I mean, I don't know. I just like too much ex-WWE on the show. That's all.
Well, they come out and old MVP says, if I give someone a Hurt Syndicate business card, it's their golden ticket to success. It can change their life. And if you reject it, this could happen to you. And they showed footage of them destroying Lashley last week.
Destroying Swerve.
Or Swerve. And he said, we wanted to help Swerve. Well, he didn't want to make an enemy out of him, but he wanted to make an enemy out of us. So Swerve's music hits, and him and Nana come out. They're held back by security. Swerve has a chain. Nana has coffee beans. Must be promoting something. And anyway, Swerve then just challenges Lashley to a match at Full Gear, so that has been added to the show.
It's an interesting one, as far as how you do a finish. Because I don't... It's like, I think Bobby has to win, but I don't really want to see Swerve lose right now. But, you know, I mean, you could do a program, have him, you know, have Swerve win later, and I guess it all works out.
Then we had Orange and Darby versus Claudio and Pac, and they were having a very good match, as you would expect. Claudio's just throwing these little dudes around, just killing them. And then finally, the babyface make a comeback. They hit some dives. Orange hits a tornado DDT on Pac. And then Wheeler Yuta hits the ring. And Orange hits him with the punch, hits Claudio with a punch, goes for one on Pac. But Maria hits the ring and just boots the referee, and he's dead. Moxley runs down, starts choking out Orange. They start ringing the bell. The match is thrown out. Darby ends up hitting Moxley with a skateboard. All the referees hit the ring. Darby lays out Claudio, Wheeler, and but then Claudio manages to hit him with a lariat. And then Claudio picks this dude up, and he walks over, and he throws him at the post, and Darby helicopters away around the post, and man, that dude smashed his head on the ground. That looked like Concussion City, and he's done. And then Moxley in the ring guillotines Orange, demands Wheeler take him out, so Wheeler hits a running knee, and then the conglomeration runs down to make the save. And I got to say, you know, the crowd hated this finish, but every time Moxley got in the ring, he got so much heat. And if this thing is going to work, which is getting over some babyface as the savior of AEW, that's what Moxley has to be, an absolutely hated guy that people can't wait to see beaten. And man, he had some heat when he hit the ring tonight. So I can't say I dislike this finish. It accomplished what it needed to.
I didn't dislike the... I don't want to say the finish itself I didn't like, but the post-match I thought was great. And I thought the match itself was really strong. Darby in particular. You know, Claudio and Pac were very, very good. Darby just... He just had something to his... You know, everything that he did, just so much intensity. I mean, really a lot of action in this match. And... yeah, good post match. I mean, I thought overall, overall strong, real strong.
We had Renee with Ricochet. She wanted to know who the mystery partner was, and the Hurt Syndicate ends up walking up and surrounding him. And Ricochet says, "MVP, we talked already." And MVP says, "Yeah, we did. Just wanted to wish you luck. That's all." Then we had the Learning Tree versus the Conglomeration fight without honor, and tables, ladders, and chairs match. Like 2 minutes in, there's bodies strewn everywhere.
They just threw people through tables and ladders the whole match.
Ladders, tables, chairs. They got This Is Awesome chance. And finally, Mark ducks a chair shot, hits Jericho with the J driller, puts Jericho on a table, hits the froggy elbow off the ladder. Bad Apple breaks it up at the last second, which got a lot of heat. And then Mark wipes him out with a dive, but he almost slips on a shirt in the ring. And then in the ring, she hits a sliding D on Jericho, grabs him, goes for the brainbuster, doesn't get him all the way up, tries a second time, drops this guy right on his head, and pins him. So Ishii versus Jericho for the Ring of Honor title is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was a fun match.
I thought it was very good. The only thing that I would say is that I am really burned out on these matches. You know, I mean, Jada Parker and Lola Vice had another, had one, you know, similar to it. I mean, people like them and everything like that, but they're, I just find the, you know, the table stuff always gets a pop, it, you know, but it's, it just feels so repetitive to me. You know, it's like, if you break a table once, it's one thing, but now we're doing these matches with like five table breaks and it's just, I mean, it, it gets over. I shouldn't complain about it, but I don't know that it's, I don't know. It's just like, to me, it just feels like, I've already seen it.
So the BCC is walking around backstage and Moxley does a promo.
No more BCC. They're the Death Riders.
The Death Riders, is that the new name?
Yep.
Wheeler owes Orange nothing.
No, they only said it.
Well, they said it multiple times, but I don't think Moxley has ever proclaimed them the Death Riders.
Well, their entrance has this big thing that says Death Riders.
All right. Well, I guess they're the Death Riders. Anyway, he says, just because this guy slept on your couch, you lent him gas money, that doesn't buy loyalty. He's not your friend. He's not your student. He's a soldier under my command. Darby, I had high hopes for you, but I'm disappointed. And he says, it's time for everyone to stop playing at this thing that they want people to think they take seriously.
Yeah.
He's sick of these people.
Mm-hmm.
Malakai Black and Adam Cole. So, I thought this match was good, but something is not working with this Adam Cole babyface run.
Well, at least he wasn't booed at all.
No, he was booed. There was a spot near the end where he went, they were doing a striking battle, and he hit a running knee, but Malakai kills him with the spinning kick, which is his finish.
Well, the spinning kick got a big pop.
Yeah. And then Cole kicked out, and everybody starts booing, and they start chanting, that was three.
Well, that might be just the deal with the count.
But it wasn't. He kicked out. It wasn't like a late count or anything. They were just upset that Malakai didn't win.
Yeah.
So Cole avoids another kick, hits a Panama Sunrise, super kick, super kick. Then Malakai just sits there, crosses his legs, dares him to finish him off. Cole hits the boom, pins him. And that was the end.
Well, they definitely didn't boo that pin.
They didn't boo the pin. Yeah. Although when he went to grab the mic afterwards, there were people booing him for that. So it is a mixed reaction here.
Yeah. But I mean, it's very few people, but they do exist. Yeah. The one thing, so they changed, because originally when they were talking about the MGF thing.
Oh, let's talk about that right now, because I'll explain
They said it would be the first guy to get to three gets a singles match. Now they say both guys, you know, if they get to three, will be in a three-way match at the pay-per-view, which to me, it's like, I almost feel that's how they're going to go. And I just think that that's watering it down. I just think that this feud, that Roderick Strong should not even be involved in this. This should be MJF and Adam
Cole. I think there's going to be more to it than just both of them get three wins and we have a three-way.
Okay.
I don't know, but so here's what happened. He cuts a promo, puts over Malakai. And he says, Max.
Boy, did he put over Malakai.
Yes, he did. You're one of the best I've ever fought.
And it wasn't like this is like one of his career great matches or this. I mean, it was a nice match, but it's like I've seen Adam Cole in probably, I don't know, 50, 75 better matches than this one.
Well, he says, Max, that's two down, one to go. Roddy had two matches to win, and they were both going to win them all. He says, people are probably asking, what happens if Roddy and I both get three wins? And actually, nobody was asking that question because we all thought that whoever got three first won, which is why I asked the other day, Adam Cole's always going on Wednesday, Roderick Strong's going on Saturday. How's that fair to Roderick Strong? So Cole says, I talked to Tony Khan.
How's it fair? Cole's wrestling Takeshita.
Well, Cole says, I talked to Tony Khan.
And Roderick Strong's wrestling Shane Taylor.
Tony said if we both get three wins, it's a three-way at Full Gear. So
yeah.
I mean, they definitely changed this.
Absolutely.
Because Max, there's no point in saying in a row if it doesn't matter if they're in a row.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're both going to be getting a shot if they both get three wins.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they've changed this for some reason. This made MJF very upset. And he calls somebody and says, I need you to pay someone a visit, which played up later on in the show. Jay White's doing a promo. Hangman attacks him. They brawl into the crowd. Hangman goes to break his ankle on the barricade, but Juice Robinson makes the save. And then Hangman ends up limping away, and Jay cuts a promo vowing to embarrass him at Full Gear and said the leg would be Hangman's undoing. Maybe he'd be the first man to make him tap out.
I hope they don't do that.
Then we had a Statlander's backstage doing a promo because she's facing Mercedes for the TBS title at Full Gear. Vows to become the new champion. She starts walking off, and Renee's going to throw her to the next thing. And all of a sudden, you hear a screech, and the camera pans over, and she's on the ground. And at first, I thought, oh my God, she destroyed her knee again. But in fact, the story was Mercedes and Camille tried to run her down, but didn't hit her. So they cut into the car, and Mercedes screams to Camille, "We missed her! Are you stupid, or are you dumb?" And she says, "Go get her!" And so she goes to get her, and Statlander beats both their asses. She slams Camille's arm in the door, choke slams Mercedes on the hood of the car, and that was the end of this segment. So it looks like we are splitting up Camille and Mercedes at some point. They've been
teasing that already, and also Mercedes and Chris Statlander was officially announced for Full Gear, which had been known.
Yes. So Christian and the Patriarchy come out, bunch of security around ringside. And I will give them a lot of credit here. Christian explains, Kip is now part of the Patriarchy. And he says, some of you are probably wondering why Kip took that clipboard away from me and prevented me from cashing in. Take a look at this clip. And they show the clip of Kip grabbing the clipboard and running off. And Christian goes after him. And they round the corner and there's Claudio and Pac. And Christian says, the reason he took that clipboard was because he knew that the BCC was going to attack me and cost me that match. And so he stole the clipboard and saved my championship match.
Yep.
I thought, God damn, that's exactly what happened. How about that? And it was good that they showed a replay because I'd forgotten that aspect of it. So Nick is not happy when Christian says that Kip is the best son he's ever had. Hook's music hits. He comes out on the ramp. Christian says, listen, you're a crazy guy. You're a wild card. And the deal is, I want you to be my son. But because of that, I had to destroy your father. He's a legend, but he was a big fish in a little pond. Buckled under pressure when he got to the big stage, hid behind the announce table. Do you want him to be an announcer like your father or a revered multi-time world champion like me? I wish your father was dead. So Hook's furious, hits the ring. Security cuts him off. Hook starts killing security. Patriarchy bails. Looks like it's going to be Hook and Christian coming up at Full Gear.
Yep.
So Don Callis is cutting a promo. He's asked about Archer and Cage, and he actually says, no more 50-50. These guys are killing everybody. Like, goddamn, they are. So some guy shows up. And he hands Callis an envelope and a ring box. And he says, this is a message from the devil. It's MJF on the phone. He says, I need somebody to take out Adam Cole. If you do this, Callis, there will be more money where that came from. But if you scratch up my ring, I know plenty of guys who will scratch you up. And Callis puts on the ring and away he goes. Penelope Ford and Jamie Hayter. Jamie won with the Haterade. They didn't have a lot of time. But I will say that for being out for 2 years, Penelope Ford, it's like she hasn't even been gone. I mean, she looks fine. Looks good in there.
She was very good.
Yeah.
She was very good. Hayter is missing something from when before she got hurt. She was really, really over, and now it's like she's having to rebuild. It didn't seem like it she doesn't have the momentum that she had before. But I thought that they had a nice match. But I thought Penelope Ford did real well. For the time that she had out there.
And then they had a brief promo. Mina Shirakawa was back next week. So apparently she swam here because I think she said she was coming back in August and it's now November, but she'll finally be here next week. And as the video is ending, a QR code appears in the bottom left-hand part of the screen. And I checked it out and it leads you to a YouTube video. Where in the world is Toni Storm? And
that's what, that's what I figured it was.
Black and white video, and she talks about how they show footage from Stardom, from CMLL.
I think I've seen that clip, the clips.
They showed that video, so if you saw the QR code, you got that Easter egg, and I presume that she will be back at any time as well.
I mean, I figure that they're probably doing a three-way with Mina, Mariah May, and Toni Storm. Maybe not at this paper. I think probably at this pay-per-view, possibly. If it's not in this one, it'd be at the next one. But that's what it feels like it's going to.
Then we had a Ricochet. Actually, before that, we had a video package on Okada where it claimed if he won the Continental Classic this year, that would be five major tournament wins. He would be tied with Masahiro Chono. That doesn't seem quite right.
It isn't quite right, but it's that's the story that they're going with.
All right.
And he did a promo. Well, they used Jim Ross to put him over, saying that Okada is one of the greatest wrestlers that he's ever seen, and maybe even number one, and top five in the world could be number one type of a thing. And then Okada said that the difference between him and Chono is that Chono was not an international star, which is actually kind of true. But Tony Schiavone was offended because
I would have been offended too, because I watched the Monday Night Wars twice and that guy was an international star. Are you kidding me?
He wasn't that over.
He was on Nitro all the time. He was part of the NWO Japan.
In Japan.
Well, yeah. I mean,
Masahiro Chono
here and there.
Masahiro Chono was super over in Japan, and then he would come to the United States and he was not over at all. I mean, that, you know. And I mean, I remember watching the Masahiro Chono matches on Nitro, and he'd be doing the same stuff he did in Japan, and the crowd just wouldn't react. And I'm like, all his signature stuff, they got over big in Japan, you know, because, you know, the deal was, is there's two differences. Number one, in those days, there were not that many people watching Japanese wrestling, as compared to, you know, like now where the AEW guys, you know, when the Japanese guys first came. It's not as much now, but when they first came, they were like big celebrities coming in. So, I mean, that was a big part of it. And the other thing is that for all the stuff where people claim, you know, and accurately, that they don't do a good job of introducing people, WCW did nothing to introduce those guys. They would just show up and you know, I mean, Muto was over because of 1989, not because of anything they did with him then, but he would be over. And Liger was over because he was so spectacular. But Chono was just a guy that would show up every now and then. I just remember him having that horrible match with Rick Rude at that one pay-per-view.
So Ricochet comes out and cuts a promo and basically says, I was told I could challenge anybody, and I did my research. I found that on October 4th of this year, a certain person's contract with the Don Callis family expired. Apparently, the Don Callis family doesn't extend contracts due to injury.
Did you hear? Yeah, I know. Did you hear the line they used?
Which line?
I think it was Rick. I think it was Excalibur. He said that it was a clerical oversight.
That's when Rock's contract was not renewed in like 2006, that was a clerical oversight.
That was like that.
Nope, they fired that clerk.
Yeah. That was like, I remember, you know, that was a very famous line because Vince actually told that, you know, when, you know, like Rock's contract expired at the end of a year. I remember the whole story. And, you know, I mean, he was in the movies and it wasn't a big deal. And him and Vince weren't necessarily getting along well anyway, because Vince didn't think that he didn't think Rock was making wise choices in the movie business, because he thought when he was playing the gay character in that one movie, because Vince thought that Rock should be, you know, what he ended up being, you know, the big tough guy beating everybody up role, you know, which is, you know, where he ended up making his money after all, but he wanted to be, you know, full range actor, take different parts, things like that. At that time, that was his goals at that time. Lost a lot of weight so he would not play the big muscle man guy and everything. But anyway, yeah, so 1 year the contract is up. I think it's 2003 or something. I forget the year. But he was talking about doing Mania. I mean, like, I remember, you know, him, you know, we were discussing names, you know, he wanted to work with Sting real bad. Which would have been difficult, but wanted Macho Man. But Macho Man was pretty much done then. There were a couple other names he was thinking of. But you know, it, yeah, contract expired. And then I think it was WrestleMania. So it'd be like, let's say the contract expired at the end of the year, then April, he goes to WrestleMania, meets with Vince, and, you know, basically makes a deal or whatever, whatever it was. They end up talking it all out. And he goes, you know, like, why did you, you know, what happened with the contract? And Vince goes, that was a clerical error. And I just thought that was like the funniest, like you forget to renew Dwayne Johnson's contract. Just somebody forgets. So anyway, they spoofed that one.
All right. So it's Hobbs. And so we got Kyle Fletcher and Takeshi versus Rikishi and Powerhouse Hobbs. And Hobbs is another one. This guy's been gone for 6 months. He got back in the ring. It was like he'd never left.
He was gigantic.
He was gigantic, and he was quite great, and the people were super into him. They were chanting meat the entire match.
I'll tell you what, he looked better than he looked before.
He was great.
I was really worried about him because, you know, he's a big dude, and he had a really bad knee injury, and he seemed to move fine.
Yeah, he's running around and jumping and doing the whole 9 yards, and, I mean, he looked great. And so, finally, do all the big spots there at the end. Rikishi hits a running lariat and pins Takeshita. So
yeah, to set up
Rikishi and Takeshita will be doing a championship match.
To set up the championship match, yeah, yeah. I thought Hobbs came across like a really big star. I could see him ending up in the Hurt Syndicate. I could see that. It actually would make sense, but he'd have to turn back. And he was over really big as a babyface.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it yet. He's too over.
Yeah.
So Fletcher takes out Hobbs and Rikishi with chair shots afterwards. He goes for the Tiger Driver on Rikishi, but Mark Davis runs down to make the save. Whoever is dressing Mark Davis, we need to have a talk. This is weeks in a row now. I mean, the fans dress better coming to the building, and you guys have been to wrestling shows, okay? So he gets in the ring, and Kyle and him get in a shoving match. Archer and Cage hit the ring. They kill Davis. Adam Cole tries to make the save. Takeshita brawls to the back with him because they're doing a match next week. Kyle goes for the screwdriver, but Will Ospreay's music hits, and this place goes bonkers. And he hits the ring, makes the save. Ospreay, Rikishi, Davis, and Hobbs run off the heels to end the show. This was a good episode of Dynamite.
I thought so. I thought a very good episode. This was a great main event match. I thought that everybody, Fletcher, man, that Fletcher was so good, and Takeshita is awesome. And, you know, Rikishi is, you know, he's really getting his legs down, and Hobbs look good. You know, even though they were building Rikishi and Takeshita is the main focus of this match, you know, with the finish and everything, they really put over Hobbs in the whole match.
All right, we got time to do a quick NXT TV report. So the floor is yours. What happened?
You know, it was like the whole thing was ECW Arena, and it was a pretty fun show. Not everything worked, but the crowd was hot from the start. You know, small crowd, but you know, sold out because it's a small building. And loud, and they reacted like the old ECW Arena. And the irony, of course, to me is ECW was the whole thing of ECW was that they were rebelling against the big companies. You know, they were the small company. And here they're going crazy like it's ECW for a WWE show. And I just found that totally amusing. But yeah, it was the same type of crowd as you would get, and they were really into the ECW guys, of course. Not everything worked, but a lot worked. So it was Lola Vice and Jada Parker in a hardcore match with Dawn Marie as ref. And, I mean, as far as being a ref, she was fine. She never was in, you know, never, you know, missed a beat or anything like that. She did fine. Much better match than you would think. They went 15 minutes, and lots of weapons. The crowd was going nuts. They even gave them a standing ovation, and it ended up with Parker doing a hip attack. You know, after they had done like a million of these near falls with crazy stuff, and then, you know, Parker wins with a hip attack. But really, really freaking good match. Ethan Page and Rich Holland were like hanging out at the Rocky statue, and Rich Holland basically said that I know that you want to be champion, but I need to be champion. Rob Van Dam was with Kalani Jordan for whatever reason. He just was. And next week, they announced that Kalani Jordan will get her rematch with Fallon Henley for the championship. Nunzio and Tony Mameluke were with the D'Angelo family, which led to Tony D defending his title against Nunzio. This was one that didn't work.
Tony D versus Nunzio?
Yeah, yeah. Didn't really work. And Rizzo is going to face Nikita Lyons next week. They talked about that. I think Nunzio or Tony Mameluke actually told her that. And so anyway, next was Javon Evans and Wes Lee. Rob Van Dam was not the ref, but he did end up getting involved. There was a deal where Rob Van Dam was backstage.
So what was he there for? Because last week he said, I know what I want to do next week.
Yeah.
Did he forget?
He was just hanging out. He got Wesley took him out with a chair shot earlier in the show. So you knew that he was going to come back during this match. So they do a match. The match was very good. A few of the spots didn't work, but Javon very, very over, you know. And there was one thing, what was it? I'm trying to remember the spot. Evans did the cardiac. Wesley did his cardiac kick, and Javon kicked out, and there was no pop. So like they just didn't know that was the finish. I mean, like I thought that could be the finish because it's his regular finishing move, and Javon loses so much. But in fact, you know, kicked out. So anyway, Evans did a tope. There was some really crazy stuff. He got a chair. Rob Van Dam was out. Tried to hit Rob Van Dam with a chair. Rob Van Dam ducked the chair shot. And then Evans nailed Wesley with a tope. Springboard, top rope, cutter. And then he ended up going for a frog splash. Wesley rolls to the other side of the ring, like three quarters of the way. And this guy takes off for the frog splash. And the idea was this would be this unbelievable looking frog splash, but he landed short. He kind of jumped on the second one. So he kind of got there, but, you know, it had been better had the guy not rolled so far away. He rolled too far to make it work, but, you know, still a win by Javon over a real guy. So, that was that. And then so Ava was going to the ring with Robert Stone and Charlie Turner, and Eddie Thorpe comes up. He wants to talk to Ava. His timing is ridiculous. She's about to go out to address, and she goes, "I'm going out to address everyone now, but I'll talk to you soon." And he basically says, "Well, I've tried before." And so she basically blows him off. So this guy's going heel for sure. He's just flabbergasted because, you know, Ava just keeps blowing him off. Anyway, Ava's big announcement is that December 7th in Minneapolis, they are going to have the next big event. And it will include the Survivor Challenge. The hottest 25 minutes in wrestling. So then there's in the ring. Then Robert Stone just decides, has this guy been a heel? Hasn't he been a babyface the whole time?
You're asking me?
Well, you watch the show. So anyway, Robert Stone, who's been, you know, just an authority figure, you know, babyface, starts talking about how, you know, this Philadelphia, you know, Ava said, like, we're in Philadelphia, the home of the most extreme fans. And he goes, like, this isn't the home of the most extreme fans. The most extreme fans are in New York or Boston. So these fans are just booing him. And then he starts on how the Eagles and the Phillies are
yeah, this would be out of character for Robert Stone of late.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're past their prime and everything like this. And then all of a sudden, Rhino comes out and gives him a gore. And, you know, people didn't know Rhino was there. Big pop. So that worked. Then we had all the babyface women were backstage, and Lash Legend Shakar Jackson kind of confronted them. So something's going on. It's going to be, I think it's going to be Lash Legend and Shakar Jackson against Julia and Stephanie Vaquer very soon. And then, what was it? Ridge Holland and, you know, Ridge Holland and Ethan Page against Trick Williams and Bully Ray. And, you know, Bully Ray was super over. Bubba Ray's, they called him. He was really over. Everything he did got over. But, you know, didn't really look that good. You know, looked old. Didn't, you know, didn't really have a big spark to him. I was a little, but I mean, the shtick was very, very over. Everything he did got over. You know, it wasn't like that, but it was just, didn't really do much trick. It was like Trick carried the match, really. It ended up with Ridge Holland cradling Trick, pinning him clean. So on that next show in Minneapolis, it's obviously going to be Ridge Holland challenging Trick for the championship. And then afterwards, they both beat up Trick Williams, and then Bully Ray made a comeback. They did the was up spot with a Trick, and then he told Trick to get a table. Trick couldn't find a table. They acted like it was a screw up and there was a table missing, and what are they going to do? But in fact, D-Von comes out with a table, and they Trick. D-Von does nothing, just brings in a table, and Trick and Bubba choke slam Ethan Page through the table because obviously they had to protect Ridge. So they didn't do nothing to Ridge, but Ethan Page's role was to just, you know, do the spot. And then Ashante the Adonis and Dion Lennox are talking. And this guy's got he's dating all these women, but he can only think of Carmen Petrovic.
Dion Lennox is back?
Yeah. And then, you know, he, she comes in. So basically the thing is that, like, she cost him the match, and he's telling her, you know, they start arguing, and he says, you're not even my type and all this, and you're not my type. So they're, like, not getting along, but of course they both want to get along. So we're just dragging that thing out. Tony D'Angelo and Nunzio. This one didn't work, even though the people did chant, you still got it to Nunzio. Him and Tony looked, I mean, you know, they are old, look, you know, but they looked old, you know, and it was not a good segment at all. Tony beat him very quickly. But yeah, it's just not good. Not good at all. Francine's deal, you know, they remember they advertised her. She just was in the crowd, and they had a quick shot of her, and she was leading the crowd chanting ECW, so they had like nothing for her at all. Sean Spears and Brooks Jensen were talking, so I think Sean Spears is going to be wrestling Tony for the North American title, maybe even next week, but very soon. Alexis King was with William Regal, and he just says, you know, I just couldn't take the knucks. I don't want to be like my father. And Regal said that he's very proud of him and all that. And then Regal comes and he's walking around and sees Charlie Dempsey. And they do this thing where it's like you're supposed to know that Regal's his father, but they do kind of this thing about like, you know, do you want to be like your father? And Dempsey is kind of like doing this, like, I don't know about this. And, but the announcers never, it's like you're supposed to know that they're the father, but they never actually tell you. So when you talk about like the idea of like playing to the hardcores, I mean, this was it because, it was like a weird segment. It was just Regal talking to Charlie. And that was pretty much it. And Regal told Miles Bourne and Tavion Heights that they need to go after the tag team titles. So that was his advice. And he's presented as the sage, older sage dude. Nikita Lyons did a promo for her match next week with Rizzo. Yeah, that's that, Henley and Jordan. And then the start of the elimination, the start of the matches to determine who's in the Iron Survivors will be next week. So then the main event, very good match, was J.C. Jane, Fallon Henley, Jasmine Nix, Roxanne Perez, Cora Jade against Julia, Stephanie Vaquer, Kalani Jordan, Jordan Grace, and Zarya. And I mean, the idea certainly was to present Zarya as the big star of the match, but goddamn, Jordan Grace was fantastic in this match. She, I mean, nobody was in that long. I mean, Roxanne, like, kind of carried a lot, I think, on the one side, which made the match good because she's the best wrestler on that side. But goddamn, when Grace got the hot tag, she was on fire. She was great. I mean, everyone was fine. Good match. They chant TNA at Jordan Grace. The finish was, you know, Zarya speared Julia. Was it Julia? Somebody moved. Zarya pinned Roxanne Perez with an F5, so obviously it's going to be Roxanne Perez and Zarya for the championship, on probably in that Minneapolis show as well. And Jasmine Nix also looked better than she's looked. Not, she wasn't in much, but her timing and stuff looked good. You know, Jordan, you know, worked with Henley, you know, doing stuff to build up. Jordan did this moonsault to the floor on all the heels at one point. Looked really, really good. And, overall good show. Real good show.
All right, let's do the Rampage spoilers. We got to wrap it up.
Okay, hold on. Hikaru Shida beat Viva Van with Falcon Arrow. Three-way tag match, Taven and Bennett. The Infantry and the Dark Order, which was Reynolds and Silver, ended up with a Taven pinning Reynolds. I heard it was a good match. After the match, Brian Cage came out attacking the Kingdom. Lance Archer then came out as well. And they laid out Bennett and Taven. So it looks like we're getting Bennett and Taven against Cage and Archer pretty soon. Roderick Strong ran in for the save. They laid him out as well. And Taven and Bennett did make a comeback on Cage and Archer and ran them off. Top Flight beat J.D. Drake and Beef. Dante Martin pinned Beef with a double-arm DDT, or double-team DDT. The two teams shook hands afterwards. And then, remember we were talking last week about that great match with Kyle Fletcher and...
Commander. Yes.
Yep. And what would they do to follow up? So the follow up is that Leo Rush beat Commander to get his win back from last
week. Didn't I tell you that?
Man, that's a botch. That is such a freaking botch. The guy got over so big. That match was so good. Oh my God. And yeah, they should do something with Commander instead of having him be this guy. And it didn't do well in the ratings in that quarter, which I knew it wouldn't, you know, because Commander, you know, when Commander first came in, his quarters were really strong for a couple weeks because he was so spectacular. But as he kept losing, it got worse and worse and worse. Surprise, surprise. And now he lost again. After the match, Taven. Leo Rush won. More aggressive, sort of heelish in the match, but the two did shake hands afterwards. So that was the show. Leo Rush and Commander, after doing the lowest rating in the history of the show, had a rematch with Leo Rush winning.
All right, well, we got to wrap it up for today, everybody. The New Observer's up on the front page, back issue as well. Another New Observer out on Friday, and we've had a bunch of shows over the last couple of days. We got big stuff coming up this weekend, and you can always check out the front page for all of the latest. And that is it. We'll talk to you again after a while.